ticket tidbits.
So Zara, passengers have taken to an online forum and they've been talking about the items that they've had confiscated from their hand luggage. Have you ever had anything taken off you?
Really boring things like hand cream and big bottles of water. Nothing interesting.
They tried to take a vintage football off my other half once.
There's a story in there.
Because he was trying to get on the plane with it blown up. And they were like, yeah, you can't do that because something about compression and it could blow up in the air and whatever. Anyway, so he said, have you got a pin so I can let it down? And they were like, no, you'll have to give it to us. And he's like, this is my great, 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 great grandfather's. I'm not giving it to you. So there was a big thing and then someone eventually gave him a pin and we got on.
Oh, well, thank goodness for that.
But yeah, on this forum, really funny list, actually. Things like a spiky earring was taken off someone. I always get on the spiky earring.
Yeah, okay, I get that.
How else do you change your SIM card in your phone when you get to the other end if you don't have a spiky earring?
Safety pin.
A super soaker. I can understand that, I guess.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want a water fight on air. In the air. Paper clips, pencils and pens got taken off one person.
Don't get that.
A referee's whistle.
That's kind of funny.
Could be annoying up there, though, couldn't it? A pot of hummus.
Oh, don't take the hummus.
Don't take our hummus. A commemorative snow globe got taken off somebody.
Well, has anyone seen, Faithful or whatever that movie is? So yeah, I can understand that being taken off them.
One guy got his love letters taken away, which I think is terribly sad.
That's heartbreaking.
And in the same vein, another guy got some dried coconuts taken off him.
I still feel sorry for the guy with the love letters.
He did have 10 dried coconuts though, which is quite excessive, isn't it?
Okay then.
Thinking, what's in the coconuts?
Food. The news and the reviews.
We have Monica here from Do in Dubai who joins us in the studio every fortnight to talk about the new places popping up in this busy city of ours to eat in. Hi Monica, welcome back.
Hello, how are you? Yeah, thank you, very nice to be back.
Yeah, good to see you. Monica, you've been to so many places. I think I only managed to do one this month. Did you manage to do any?
I did one as well, but yeah, nowhere near the amount that Monica has done.
No, it's not really the amount. So now we've got the reviews in, so lots of things I sort of like eat by my eyes and digest everything for you, the information, then I kind of spit it back at you in a nice fashion, of course. But no, I probably have eaten at a few places, yeah, a few more places than you in the last 2 weeks.
And the first one we're going to talk about, I actually do know this place.
Okay, so Supernatural Kitchen is what we're talking about. Does anyone know where it is? You know where it is, Steph.
Well, it used to be something else, right?
It used to be Natural Bistro or something like that.
Supernatural.
Yeah, that's right. So let's not confuse it. Supernatural Kitchen at Gallery Lafayette in Dubai Mall. And we went there last Wednesday for a sort of tasting with a few food bloggers. And we met a really interesting young chef called Athena. And this is what she had to say about what she has.
Yeah, you were talking to her and she says, when people say to her, you're a vegan, what do you eat? This is what she says back to them.
So if you eat pizza and lasagna and burgers, I can do the same, but a plant-based option. And that's the challenge, is just breaking that stereotype that vegans wear tie-dye and only eat salad.
Wear tie-dye and only eat salad.
Okay. Nothing wrong with tie-dye.
There's a little bit coming up in a later clip that says she's sort of slightly not as not hippie-ish as that. But absolutely. So we had sushi. Anyone like vegetarian sushi? What do you think is in vegetarian sushi?
Never had it.
Okay, so I had vegetarian sushi, I want to say a couple of days ago at Catch.
And oh, yes.
It had avocado in it, which was delicious. Mm-hmm. Obviously seaweed, a bit of rice, and a really yummy miso dressing. But I can't remember what else, Monica.
Okay, so avocado type things, you have those sort of pickled plum type yellow and red ones that you have in Japanese.
But what
I thought was very interesting about the sushi that we had at Supernatural Kitchen was it wasn't rice that the internal vegetarian filling was wrapped around. It was cauliflower rice. So, you know, we've all sort of seen those, lots of us have seen those vegetarian recipes. So instead of doing your risotto with rice or anything as a rice base, you get the cauliflower, you grate it up and then you steam it or you flavour it, whatever.
I do this all the time, you know.
Yeah, I can see you
doing
that.
No, I promise. Honestly,
really?
I do.
Oh, okay.
I always have cauliflower rice with curry. So what I'll do is put the cauliflower in the oven, roast it for quite a while, and then I put it in my blender.
Okay.
And it's amazing, and I put chia seeds with it, and it's
perfect.
Way better than rice.
This is a big departure from your lamb's neck, scraggy, whatever, cooked for 36 hours, or whatever. I like the sound of this. I will come to dinner at your house, Steph.
I did it for weight loss initially, years ago, and it totally worked if you replace rice
and
with
now,
that.
And now, do you like the taste?
Yeah.
I would as well. So she makes this sushi wrapped up in this, but I think the picture that got the most likes, I think, on my Instagram, it's not a massive Instagram, but go to doindubai.com's Instagram, was a cheese board, and I sort of took this picture without thinking about it.
Haven't vegans have cheese?
Exactly. So she does this special thing where she produces this vegan cheese without any sort of dairy aspect of it at all. And we were kind of busy talking, trying to not look naff, eating at the same time, interviewing her. And I kind of clicked away a picture. And I didn't realise that the picture actually is not one of these sort of perfect pictures, you know, the very PR pictures. It's got the knife in, it's got half the kind of creamy cheese taken out, is another knife about to go in. And it's just garnered so many likes and so many comments, I can't tell you. So go and try this cheese board. But I have to say, that is not the
Does
nicest
it
thing
like
on the
cheese?
Menu.
Tastes like cheese.
Tastes like cheese.
It's what got kind even, of cheese?
If you have like on a cheese board, so you'd have a bit of a hard cheese like a cheddar, you'd have a creamy cheese, you might have like a brie camembert type of thing. So you have all these equivalents. They've got them all. I couldn't try them all. There were so many there. So the three that I tried were great. And the thing that was even nicer
Wait, we're going back to cheese. I haven't finished with the cheese questions yet. Is this cheese meltable on toast?
I don't know.
That's a very important question,
very
Monica.
Very important question. She'd probably, yeah. If you can have grilled cheese on toast, I'm sure she'd do something that would melt it properly.
Can they have toast?
Yeah, it's not gluten-free. It's vegan. It's not...
But here's the thing, Monica. I don't know if I like the whole kind of idea of fake cheeses and fake meats, because I was vegan for about 18 months and those kind of things just turn you off. So do you think people who don't want to have dairy would actually go for the alternative, this fake cheese?
I think that's a really good point, Zara. I think it's what's in the ingredients that makes them not original. I don't like to say fake, that makes them not original. So if you've got some horrid vegetable sausage that's full of dehydrodextrose, whatever it is, and all those things that you can get in things, but it's vegetarian, I'd say no, I don't think that's going to be very good for you. Having chatted to Athena, tried her food and knowing a bit about the philosophy, I don't think you're going to get any funny substitutes in her food. I think it's all going to be good stuff that you're eating. And, you know, instinct is a very good thing. If it tastes right, if it looks right, it probably is right.
I have to say as well, when I used to do breakfast, I would go home at like 11 o'clock those days. And on my way back home, I would pop in to get some vegan food as a takeaway. And it used to be quite annoying because I'd get home, eat it, and it would wake me up. Like, honestly, you can feel it doing good things to your body. Yeah. It like just brings you back to life. Yeah. And I wanted to have a nap. And I'm like, oh, now I'm awake because I've had the vegan pizza.
And I think Athena had a few health issues as well, and as did some members of her family. And I think she is completely convinced that she was hugely helped, if not cured completely, by sort of totally advocating this sort of plant-based diet, this
Isn't
nutrition
that
nutrient
funny?
Dense.
A lot of people only find veganism when they're ill.
That's true. Or maybe their doctor has said, like you were just explaining there, Monica, why don't you try taking things out of your diet and just see how it affects you?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you had this healthy forum yesterday. Was it Healthy Communities? I was hearing all about that on the radio. Anything that anybody could do in the direction of being a little bit more healthy. So I don't think it's that easy for people to say, right, I'm not going to eat any meat anymore. No. I'm not going to eat any fish anymore. But like what we're doing this week, for our five evening meals, we're trying to have vegetarian meals with minimal dairy. And I mean, it's Tuesday tonight. We're there. So yes, it does make you kind of think a little bit more. And I just think it's a good thing to do. But that doesn't mean we're giving up everything that we used to have, to see how we go and how we feel.
Well, you did this for 18 months, Zara.
I'm going to be very honest here. I was a bad vegan. So I didn't carefully prepare my menus. And I remember I was training for a triathlon at the same time. And I don't think I took the right supplements. I don't think I had enough protein in my diet. But hands in the air, I was a little bit lazy with my diet. And I'd go home and sometimes I'd be too tired to make dinner. So I would just chug an entire tub of hummus. Oh, and that is not good.
No.
Well, here's Chef Anthea from Supernatural Kitchen telling us exactly what 100% raw really means.
It's not cooked, so you're keeping all of the nutrients in every single fruit and vegetable that we use. The nuts are soaked and dehydrated to activate them so that they're much more friendly for you to digest. Mm-hmm. And we just use the freshest and organic where possible and local ingredients to make sure that you really taste every flavour and you don't need cooking or extremely strong flavours to mask the natural taste of the fruits and vegetables.
I honestly nearly bought a dehydrator. I got so into this food. I was like, I need to do this with everything because you cook it really slowly.
Wait, where would you buy a dehydrator? Would it be in Galerie Lafayette?
No. The Organic Foods and Cafe had them in there.
Okay,
they're quite expensive.
How much are they?
I think it was something like 4,000 dirhams, like quite a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
But doing your food this way, they're right, like mushrooms taste like a completely different beast.
So lots of concentrated flavours in the food. You don't have to add lots of things is what she's saying.
So good.
Interesting.
But yeah, I do like that kind of food, but yep. It's the kind of food I could never do myself. Never. Mm. So it would be such an effort to try and do that diet. And I said to them when they first opened and it was Be Supernatural, I said to them, you need to do a meal plan. Like, if you could deliver this to me and I could do this plan for a month and see how I felt, then I'd do it.
I think that's the thing. And it just goes back to this idea of planning your meals.
Yeah.
Like what you're doing right now, Monica, with the 5-day dinners.
Absolutely. I think it can be done. But yes, I agree. If I just wanted Athena to tell me, this is what you should eat, and here it is, and here's the little bits that you need. So eventually they might kind of roll out or evolve a little bit of sort of products and things that you can buy that would make it easy. But yeah, I don't think it's impossible. What I have found is looking up things that you can do with sort of mung beans and things like that. I'm making mung dal chillas. They're sort of like semi-mung bean pancake things. A lot of the really good recipes are all in quite, what do you call it, a vernacular Hindi, and I can understand it, but my maid and I sit there watching it and she can't understand it, but between us we managed to get a really good mung bean pancake, and I'm going to put that recipe on as well.
I like to wander around Spinnies or Choy Drums and see something that I don't know what it is, and then I'll go away and Google what I would do with it.
Well, Dubai is easy because, I mean, there's so many different nationalities, and we probably would go to the same shops and pick up completely, I mean, not maybe you and I, Steph, because both sort of Western.
No, I think we
angle.
Would, because I think you cook very differently to me. Like,
true. Yeah.
I cook things like pie.
Right, okay. No, I wouldn't cook pie. I don't try not to buy anything connected to pastry, apart from Christmas time when we do little mince pies at home. So I'll get the pastry
They're
for
not
that.
Pies. They okay. are not.
This well, is mince pie. Of course it was pie.
We can have that argument in 52 days, because Christmas is 54
right.
days
oh
away.
Oh my gosh.
We're going to come back though. We're going to talk more about food. We're also going to be seeing what Monica thinks of our ticket talkback subject today, which is us getting nostalgic, talking about arriving in Dubai as an expat. And you've been sharing your Dubai stories with us, the Dubai that you knew when you stepped off the plane. Find out what Monica's was next. So we've been getting nostalgic on the ticket today, talking about arriving in Dubai as an expat. For me, it was 11 years ago. I was a 26-year-old, and it was just like a different world to me. I'd gotten rid of all my jeans and jumpers because someone told me it was going to be hot. And then I got here and they had the aircon on, and I was pretty devastated that I had nothing to wear. And then I had to start building the wardrobe again from scratch. And it's more expensive here to do that, of course.
I was just telling quite a disgusting story off air to Monica, who's obviously our resident food correspondent. And oh, Monica, that story just about coming back to Dubai, must have been about 6 years old, having lived in America for a couple of years, kind of gotten used to, you know, the fast food diet, and being horrified that a couple of very famous fast food outlets had not come to Dubai yet.
Yeah, but that was then. It's not now, is it?
Oh, no. They are both
different
very
story
much
now. Different story. We also came around 11 years ago, and you were asking me off air what I was sort of nostalgic about. And initially I said, well, nothing, because I really like Dubai now. I like the fact, well, not everything, but I love the fact that it's evolved into this sort of much more cosmopolitan, much more international city, and there's a lot more to do, and it's great. I like lots of things about it, but I do remember when we came, that kind of fun and excitement at doing things for the first time in Dubai, especially going to Mina Bazaar, that sort of area, looking at all the sort of Indian things, and even in London now there's lots of sort of Indian restaurants, but going and trying all that street food that I used to think was so yummy and quite not that easy to access in London then, but it was so reasonably priced, and it still is. It was great to say, gosh, I can have this anytime. And I think I sort of OD'd on that kind of food in the first couple of years, and now obviously I don't eat too much of it. And things like, oh, that chair's not very nice, let me just get it reupholstered. And it would come back, and we did this once. We had a chair reupholstered. I don't think the material was very expensive, but we really didn't like how it came out. And we said, oh, can we just have it redone? Because it was so reasonable to do things like that here. Obviously, I haven't done that subsequently. But those sorts of things, when you come from a very country where labour is very, very, very expensive for things like that, that was great and really refreshing. And I still value Dubai for those sorts of things.
And we had a few text messages coming in. Some great ones have been coming in throughout the show, haven't they, Zara?
They have. We're going to start with Orez, who says, I came to Dubai in 2003 at the age of 21. After a couple of days in a hotel, I got a studio flat opposite the Dubai Creek Abra station. It was 7,000 dirhams per year.
No way.
Yes.
No way.
And then Simon, oh, the image I've got in my head, Simon, is a little bit terrifying. I'm not going to lie. Simon says, I worked on the launch of Dubai Marina and I drove around the bottom on the day they let the water in.
I'll be driving around that pretty fast looking for the exit, yes. I imagine. Mm. Let me out.
I wonder if anyone drove along the bottom of the creek before they put the water in.
And the canal, the new canal. Yeah. We wondered that, actually.
Have we got time for one more? Mm-hmm. So Marilyn says, I remember Prince Charles and Princess Diana coming, and we were waiting at the road, and we wanted to get a glimpse of them while they passed us in Bir Dubai.
Amazing. God, keep your memories coming
Diana
in.
What is Princess Diana doing in Bir Dubai? I can't see that.
Having a wonderful time. She also went to Oman. You know the Alila?
The Elite, yes.
That's why Prince Harry went to stay out there that time, because she spent a lot of time over there.
And also I got something in about the Anantara that's just open near the Jabal Akhdar, and there's a restaurant which is like a promontory sort of over, not over sea, but over the kind of mountainy, rocky parts, and that's apparently where she spent a lot of time as well.
Yeah, Green Mountain, one of the most beautiful
places.
They've
made a restaurant there.
Food, the news and the reviews.
As is Monica from Do in Dubai. Monica, I have a restaurant that I would like to run past you, if I may.
Oh, yes, please do.
It's called Jan. Now, it's on the penthouse level of the Sofitel in downtown. And I spoke to the owner and the chef, Farouk, when I was there. And he told me why he thinks we need a progressive Indian restaurant here in Dubai.
When I came to Dubai about 8 months ago, I felt that there was a huge gap in the market for an international-looking, international-feel Indian restaurant. I think it was totally missing.
What do you think? Have you seen that gap in the market?
I read the press release and I have been invited to go. I just haven't had a chance to kind of make my way there.
Is it the kind of thing you would fancy?
I read that word progressive, and I have to be honest with you, Steph and Zara. My heart sank and I thought, oh no, not another progressive restaurant, another progressive Indian restaurant. And I thought, is this more molecular stuff, molecular gastronomy? Do we need this? We've spoken about this before. I really wasn't sure. And then I read this whole big thing about, oh, the design is very, very important. And I had a very, very quick look. So it's probably, you know, not a sort of good indication. But, you know, you look at the pictures that you see, and some pictures you think, wow, that looks amazing. And I looked at the pictures and the design also didn't really wow me. But I'm sure I'll just be completely, wrong. I'll eat my words when I go there and have a look at it. But, what did you think of the food?
I did like the food. Mm. There were some amazing creations that he's put together. He's put a lot of work into this idea.
I have been working on this menu and this concept for the last 6-7 months. Back home, I own and run 5 Japanese and Oriental restaurants. I thought of doing something really which Dubai has not seen.
Sarah, what do you think? Indian food with a Japanese twist?
Oh, I mean, he sounds like a busy man. I'm just going to say that. He already runs so many restaurants. I'm all for fusion. I don't know about you, Monica, but I actually really love it when I see that on a plate.
I'm not sure. I've had a few experiences recently, and I'm not entirely sure that everybody has the skill to do it so that you actually, it adds to the food. I think sometimes it actually detracts.
Let Farouk talk you through one of his favorite dishes. Tell me what you think of this, Monica.
The Amritsari hummus chole kulcha. It's a dish which I've created for the UAE market. So I've taken the idea of an hummus. We have something called chole kulcha, which is made of chickpeas back home. And I made a hummus out of it with a little gravy. And instead of the pita, we've got these lovely leavened stuffed Amritsari kulchas, which is made in the tandoor. And I think it's a great combination. I think I love that dish the most.
Thought?
Did you try that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I know precisely what he's talking about in terms of chole and kulcha. Chole is like the chickpea curry. The kulcha is sort of like a kind of deep fried bread or soft bread. And you can make hummus from chickpeas. And I don't know, my thoughts are it sounds like a very mashed up chole.
It was very rich.
Yeah.
It was nice, but I couldn't eat a lot of it.
No, I think if I wanted chole and kulcha, I would have that.
Purist.
And if I wanted... Yeah, absolutely, purist. And if I wanted hummus and pita bread, I would have that. I don't really want my hummus to look like chole and my chole to be hummus.
We don't want change. We don't
want
change.
No, I'm not saying we don't want change. I went to Rung Mahal a while ago. I think it was a Christmas thing. And is it Vineet Bhatia? I don't know. Or Atul Kochar, I don't know. One of them. And they do something really, really interesting with burrata and a sort of an Indian aubergine thing. And pomegranate seeds, and it works fabulously well. So the jury's out. If it works well, I'm all for it. But just doing it for the sake of it, I'm not sure that it's necessary. So it will have to win me over.
Any ideas what Jan means? J-A-A-N, Zara. I'm not going to ask you, Monica, because I know you know. You know everything.
And it's pronounced Jan, by the way.
Sorry.
Oh,
Jan. Not
Jan.
Jan.
I do not have a clue.
In Newcastle upon Tyne, it's pronounced Jan.
Okay.
Jan. I don't know.
You don't know? Okay, have a little listen. My guess was miles off.
Jan means love and life. Okay, so those are the two words. Actually, Jaan comes from very old Urdu word, okay, which means love and life. It has connections in Turkey, in Islam, and in Iran and stuff like that. So people relate to it quite easily. So Janu means love, so Bajan means love really. And for me it's the love of food and for the love of making this restaurant exceptional.
Do you know what I thought it was?
Sure, tell me.
I thought it was J-A for Japan and then A-N for Indian. So
okay.
You know, fusing the two.
So maybe I'll tell the next person that.
He stole your idea.
I think that is amazing. I think that's brilliant, Steph. That should go down in the sort of top 10 moments. That's brilliant thought. Yeah. Ja-an.
Yeah, that's what
Japanese
I would have thought.
Japanese and Indian. Right, fabulous.
How much do you think you expect to pay for dinner?
Well, it's a Sofitel. It's called the Penthouse at Ja-an or something like that. I think without beverages, it's going to be at least $250 a head.
What do you reckon, Zara?
Okay, without beverages, I'm going to say 175.
Oh, we can tell the expert in the room.
Approximately 350 to 400 dirhams for a table for two, I think. Yeah. I mean, all my restaurants are value for money. Somebody asked me, are you a celebrity chef? I said, not really. I said, I cater to the world celebrities. It's a fact. Okay, but at the same time, I like to keep my feet grounded.
That is Chef Farouk, the owner, and the chef also at Ja-an at the Sofitel downtown. I don't think anyone's going to be heading there, are they?
No, I will head there. I will definitely go there. I just genuinely didn't have a slot to go there because it was Diwali, it was my husband's birthday, so we were a little bit busy for personal reasons. But I'm definitely going to get down there.
Love to know what you think because it is. Okay. It really
okay,
does.
Done. I will get
have
there
a twist.
And next time I'm on, we will chat about what I thought of it, and I'll have that dish that you mentioned.
Now, one that you hadn't been to last time we spoke, but you have now, Been There Bistro.
Been There Bistro. So if we say Been There Bistro, what do you think the bean would stand for? First of all,
coffee bean.
I didn't think that. Yeah. What would you think, Zara?
I would think like black beans, kidney
beans.
Green
beans. Yeah, I thought green beans. So lots of people go in and they say, oh, is this a vegan restaurant? Is it a vegetarian restaurant?
Yeah.
And they say, no, not necessarily. But anyway, we mention it because it was big on the blogosphere. We went along. It is a design lover's dream. This is an interesting example. Abela, I don't know if either of you have heard of that company, are very big in catering for institutions and have been for many, many, many years. In Dubai, probably when Mona was around in 1986, actually, they were probably around. So this is their first foray into, a sort of coffee shop. Second one, I think the first one is a coffee kind of shop. This is much more of a restaurant cafe.
Let's just take a moment to acknowledge that Steph was right.
About what?
The bean.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, she's right again. So they've got this lovely vertical garden. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
Of course.
Beautiful, fresh flowers. We were talking about Ruya last time. They also have a vertical garden, but it's not real. But I don't think it matters too much. I mean, you don't notice. But food bloggers go up and they'll feel the thing and think, gosh, is this real or not?
I like a real one.
I love it. And it's a bit of the kind of greenery coming in. It keeps it fresher. And they've got a really beautiful long table, like a communal table that's made from one piece of wood. I think they've got wood sort of brought in from Malaysia, Southeast Asia. So that's all very, very nice. Very, very good value for money. They've got a happy hour deal every day, 5 till 8 o'clock. So how much do you think it would be for a main course, a decent main course in a beautifully designed environment with two beverages, with two alcoholic beverages of your choice?
Where is it?
So this is in the Millennium Airport Hotel side of town.
Gahood
area.
It's a
very, very nice, designed cafe.
Okay, so how many courses are we saying?
You're saying one main course and two beverages.
And
it's not ladies' night or anything. It's anybody can have this. It's not sort of specially...
149 dirhams, Zara?
I'm going to say 270 dirhams.
Try 75. So
what?
I think that's a bit of my deal of the week. 75 dirhams, main course, two beverages on the side. So go try it. Or you can just get 35% off your bill every day between 5 and 8. So I really like the fresh soup. I like the crab cakes. And I also like the blueberry ice cream. That was good.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Been There Bistro.
Yeah, we've been
check
there
check it out. We've been there. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking that as well. When I got the bean right, I was thinking maybe it's like a retro cafe and it's like been there. You'd been there in the 70s. That's what I was thinking as well. Arrows and Sparrows. Is this another cafe or is it a restaurant?
This is a cafe. I would call it a cafe. It's in the Greens area of Dubai. Anybody know the Greens?
Anybody? Where people walk their dogs.
Yeah. Does anyone go to the Greens?
You have to, if you go to Emaar Business Park to do anything connected to an Emaar property, you have to go to the Greens because that's
where it's
based.
Because I know people who live in the Greens love the Greens.
Mm.
They're real greenies.
Okay.
But I've only ever been there to walk a dog.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I go there to walk a dog.
Right, okay. I've never been there to walk my dog. But anyway, so Arrows and Sparrows, really nice. Little community cafe. They've got a yoga studio upstairs. I don't think the yoga studio is connected to the cafe. But can you imagine doing your yoga class and then coming down? You have to kind of wind down, have a coffee, something to eat.
I can imagine that if I was a different girl.
So we went there for a sort of breakfast brunch thing. I think it was last Friday. And have you heard of Eggs Benedict for breakfast, either of you? What do you think that would be?
Of course.
And what is Eggs Benedict to you, Steph?
We know Eggs Benedict.
Oh, no. I always get Eggs Benedict confused with Eggs Florentine.
Right. Okay.
You fool. No, you can't. You can't.
It's the one with salmon. It's the one with
no,
salmon.
No, it's definitely not. It's the one
it's
with...
It's not salmon. You're right. Again, Steph. Sorry, did we get
Biggie
that? Right
turkey
again.
Ham.
Okay, so they have a Mr. Benedict and they have a Miss Benedict, which I thought was very, very interesting. So basically, the combination for the Miss Benedict is the poached eggs on some toast with some hollandaise on it. So the and very similar for the Mr. Benedict. I think there probably is some turkey bacon or turkey ham there. They've got some very nice crunchy, crispy kale and spinach going on the side. But the Miss Benedict is distinguished by the fact that it's got not normal sort of fatty hollandaise. They've got beetroot hollandaise sauce going on.
Oh,
so it's
yum.
All this pink going on for the girls, I suppose, for the Miss thing. So I think that was really nice. Massive portion. More than enough for you to share. So we had that. That was quite a lot. And I also very much like the muesli that they had on offer, which was 30 dirhams, massive portion. You know, you can tell if a muesli's been done properly. You know, you look at it and you think, I don't know, have you kind of done a bit of a shortcut here? They hadn't, because it tasted very, very crunchy. It didn't taste sweet, so they didn't have any added sugar. They had very nice, it wasn't like cheap little berries, really good plump juicy blueberries on it, strawberries on it as well, and that came with some good plain vanilla yogurt. So I highly recommend that. Big portions, don't sort of over order. And what do you think of the Arrows and Sparrows title? I like the title.
A little bit of me feels like it was done just because you're going to have an arrow and a bird in the logo to be cool.
Yeah.
Like,
okay. What do you think, Zara?
I don't like it, if I'm being honest with you. I just think it sounds a bit lazy. And again, yeah, I just imagine some hipster designing the logo right now going, we'll put a sparrow, which is a popular tattoo, and an arrow.
Okay, well, you're both completely wrong here. So Arrows and Sparrows, if you speak to the owner, very, very interesting. The first cafe they owned was Friends Avenue, which I think is in JLT. So this is a sort of second foray into the restaurant cafe arena. So he said the Arrows are actually him and his friend, because they actually Uzbekistani, I think, originally, and they studied in Finland and they spent a lot of time in New York and America. So in Native American language, the symbol, you know, they had lots of sort of symbols that meant different things. That symbol for arrows meant friendship. So him and his friend have opened this cafe. And then he says the sparrows are you guys. So sparrows like to fly around a lot, they like to eat a lot, and they go around in groups. So I thought, so he said arrows and sparrows. So I bought that. And I thought that was quite nice.
They also get very fat over the winter, don't they?
Are you talking about yourself here now, Steph?
Well, the sparrows shoot the sparrows?
No, don't think about arrows. That's what people think, yeah. So that was Arrows and Sparrows. Free parking for 2 hours, Emar Business Park, Building 4 in the Greens.
Welcome back to The Ticket with Steph and Zara. We've also got Monica here.
Hello.
Food, the news and the reviews.
Monica from doindubai.com, of course. And we are talking about the new places that you can go and eat. And right now in Dubai, there seems to be like 3 popping up a week at the minute. It's crazy, isn't it?
I think there are, yeah.
I love it though.
Okay.
I do love it. Like every weekend, I'm like, let's go somewhere new for breakfast.
Well, one of the places we're going to talk about, actually, it's somewhere you can go tonight. It's not 3 popping up, it's 7 popping up together. So these are 7 new restaurants, all of which are licensed on the Palm Jumeirah. It's called, the development's called Vista Mare. So 7 different types of restaurants.
What do you mean? Popping up?
Popping up. They're not pop-ups in that they're 7 restaurants that have opened. They're proper permanent restaurants. And it's in this development called Vista Mare by Nikhil on the Palm, I think toward the Oceania side of things.
7.
All of which are licensed, yeah. They're all in soft opening phase at the moment. But what was interesting was Nikhil promised that all of them would open together.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 caught my eye. Again, I haven't been down there, but I'm going to. You could go down tonight, and I think you should, because there's 50% off all your food if you go down tonight to this place called Ahi. So it's spelt A-J-I, but it's pronounced Ahi. Now, we were talking earlier about Japanese-Indian fusion. This is Japanese-Peruvian fusion, which we've spoken about many times before. Who remembers what the word is for Japanese-Peruvian fusion?
I have a really bad short-term memory. If it was over a year ago, I could tell you.
It was less than a year.
No, it's not there
called,
then.
It's called Nikkei. Remember the N-I-K-K-E-I?
Yes.
That Nikkei fusion. So that was when we had the beginning of all these Koya and all these...
You know what, though? That's not much
Japanese
of a leap,
Peruvian.
Is it?
What?
Japanese
really?
And Peruvian. It's not like Japanese
is a...
Leap.
Well, I don't know.
Food-wise.
I mean,
I
don't know.
But it's such an interesting story, just this idea that loads of Japanese people went over to...
Emigrate. Because Peru was the first country that allowed all these Japanese... And did you know that Fujimori he's not still the president, but he was the first prime minister of Peru. Not the first, one of the prime ministers of Peru. So Japanese. So yeah, so complete integration. And I think the chef there, whose name is Eric, his mother is, or I don't know, one parent is Japanese and the other parent is Peruvian. So you're getting a completely genuine fusion, if you like, in the chef. So go down there. And interestingly, that concept was brought to you by the same people who brought us Pantry Cafe. And I remember talking to the owner then, a really nice lady called Jana, who said, oh, this is in the making, this is sort of in the pipeline. And I think it's probably opened a little later than they thought. So that's one place I think you should go down to. I think that deal is on tonight and tomorrow.
Where is Vista Mare?
Vista Mare. The Palm Jumeirah.
I know, but
go down there. I think
toward place,
yeah.
You either 5 minutes on the Palm or 20.
I think it's toward the sort of Oceania bit of town, but I haven't looked it up properly and I haven't been there, so I can tell you definitely next time I'm on.
Well, don't worry, I can hear Zara's little fingers going like the
coffers
in the
background. There's also another one that sounded very interesting called Gursha, and that's an Ethiopian restaurant, which I'm also very keen to try.
I love Ethiopian food.
Yeah, so they've got very nice.
Wait, there's a new one?
This one of the seven. So these are two of the seven that caught my eye. Was this ahi, which is the Japanese Peruvian, and gursha.
Seven restaurants.
They can.
At
they
once.
Have. They can, and they have. They've done it. And
my tummy says yes.
Space.
You can.
Yes, absolutely. So apparently you can sit down with your toes in the sand and look out the sea, and you can have a beverage and something to eat in a very nice setting. So yeah. So I'm going to talk about what they're actually like when we come back next time.
Fantastic. So that's tonight, so you can get 50% off your food.
That's tonight. Now here's
is it at all of the restaurants or only at Ahi?
I think most of them would be open. I can't say for sure. Yeah.
But
50% Ahi, yeah, that's what I've been told about. I don't know about 50% off at the other places.
Super duper, where are we going next?
We're going next to something you can only do in November. So today's Tuesday, but after tomorrow, every Wednesday in November, you can eat at, and I think you've spoken about this restaurant before, called Noir,
yeah.
Which is this dining in the dark concept at the Fairmont on Sheikh Zayed Road, not the Fairmont on the Palm.
Have you done this before?
I haven't done this before, and I was fascinated to go because it was Noir, because I hadn't done it before, but they were also sort of combining it with a special Scottish beverage. And they had a person, his name was Struan Grant Ralph, and his family own the sort of Scottish beverage company that the meal that we had was being paired with. So he very, very expertly curated the evening for us and all the sort of different pairings that went with the meal. So we sort of met him first at the outset. We had a little introduction and a bit of a snack, and then we kind of get the instructions and we put our hands on each other's shoulders and we go into the dark. So I thought that whole thing was fascinating, and I'm very, very glad I experienced it. But you could do it every Wednesday after tomorrow. The guy who's curating it now is a chap called Christopher Chambers, who's based here, and he's one of 20 different ambassadors who from around the world have put together this Scottish beverage. And I really thought this was very interesting.
Do you know what's really tough for people who work in like an audio field? I did this, and being in the dark, right, you know, when you're having a conversation, like Monica can see that I want to say something because I'll look at her and I'll give her like a kind of a cue that I want to jump into the conversation, right?
Yeah.
You cannot do that in the dark. So I honestly, when I went there, I sat for about an hour and a half in silence because I couldn't find a space to jump in.
This is fascinating, absolutely fascinating, because my husband was like, oh, this is, what are you dragging me along to now? I'm not really interested in this. It was probably one of the best developmental things I have ever done, amongst many, for my husband. And I'll tell you what was
what
very...
What do you mean?
Well, we'll have another conversation off air about that later. And I tell you what was very interesting. I didn't have a problem talking. I generally don't have a problem talking unless I'm very sad and people know there's something wrong with me then. Whether it's dark, light or whatever, it doesn't matter. So I sat down there and I didn't know who was sitting to my left or opposite me, but we just said, hello, who are you? Da, 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 da. My husband was sitting to my right. And he very quickly, he didn't take an hour and a half to figure this out, Steph, like you did, figured if he didn't say anything, it was like he wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Because very often when we are out together, just the mere fact of him being there and me seeing that he is there fiddling with his phone or whatever it is he's doing seems to him to be enough, and this obviously wasn't. And he thought, gosh, if I don't say anything, it's like I'm not there. So it's literally speak or vanish. I have never heard him speak so much to people he's never seen, met before, been with in a public place in my life.
That's
so
hilarious.
I thought it was fantastic.
So wait a second. Are we marketing this place as, oh, having trouble talking to your spouse? Bring them to Noir.
Why not? I say why not.
I like it.
Yeah, why not?
You know what else is dangerous about the situation, though? If you drop your fork.
We did that. A few people did that.
No.
And then you just put your hand up and they're supposed to see in the dark. And then they come and they say, don't worry. But what was also very, I mean, I don't know about interesting, but it happened. We sat down. Nothing had been served in terms of sort of beverages or food. And someone, a lady to my right, just said, excuse me, I want to leave. I need to leave now. And she had to say that a few times, and they had to walk her out because she just couldn't deal with the dark.
Don't you think it's also weird, like getting to know people when you don't know what they look like?
I think it's fascinating because... you really listen. And if someone was interviewing you for, or you were interviewing someone for a job, you'd have to listen so hard. You wouldn't have any prejudices, would you?
Nah.
About what they looked like or what tattoo that they might have or I don't know, the length of their hair or their nationality or whatever. I mean, I'm Indian. Probably people can't hear that from my voice.
But I mean, isn't that just what people are doing right now listening to us on the radio? They
hopefully,
can't see us.
Hopefully, yeah, absolutely.
Well, so Mark thinks that Monica's like the queen. Well, okay,
well, Mark needs to get out a bit more and listen to a little bit more radio and a few more English television programmes.
Before we kick you out and let Drive Live get on with what they want to do with the yes. Drive Show, we've got another Italian restaurant to check out, haven't we?
Yes, absolutely. Il Capo. Now, we know what John means. What does Il Capo mean?
Il Capo means... it means I will tie some concrete blocks to your feet and throw them in the ocean.
Was that an Indian accent? Sorry, you're trying to do
it's
that.
Italian.
Sorry. Oh, right, of course, yeah. Zara, il capo.
It's a cheese.
No, it's not cheese. It's like kind of what Steph is saying, right again. It's sort of the godfather, the boss.
What?
Sort of thing. It means the boss.
Wait, how are you getting all of these?
I don't know. I'm having one of them days where things are just coming to me.
Yeah. So this is a very, very, very elegant Italian restaurant. It's in the Westin Hotel, which is not the Westin in Minas Yahi. It's the Westin in... the Al Haptor City.
Is that also the W?
It's not also the W. Well, the W's there. The Westin is the third, I think, of three hotels to open in Al Haptor City. So the W is opened. St. Regis has opened. I think St. Regis opened first. And now the Westin has opened, bringing with it, I don't know, 1,000 more guest spaces or rooms or whatever it is, making it sort of, I think, one of the largest hotels. And that Al Haptor City is a massive complex, if you like, for people to stay. So obviously the restaurants have opened as well. And we were invited to try last Saturday something called La Cena, C-E-N-A, which actually means dinner in Italian. So it's a sort of set dinner. And I walked in and, you know, you're kind of like, okay, going and trying meals, Dubai. Nothing's really too formal unless I know it's sort of a gold-gilded sort of invitation. And I walked in and I thought, oh my God, this dress is not formal enough because it just very, very beautiful, formal, elegant restaurant. And then I kind of relaxed. It was fine. But it's more formal than you think it's going to be. The
That's
food
weird because I feel like everywhere in Dubai you can sort of dress down.
Exactly, that's what I think as well. But the food, I have to say, was not formal at all. Now, what's interesting about this restaurant is they serve American Italian food, which I'm not sure is going to be to everybody's taste. But what do you think about American Italian food?
Carbonara.
Sitting in a fancy dress, trying to chug down spaghetti bolognese.
Spaghetti and meatball sort of thing is like an Italian kind of thing. No. I mean, we didn't have that in the Shena thing. And there are lots of sort of very beautifully and elegantly presented bits of food. But in terms of how the food tastes, it's not what you would say sort of Italian, classic Italian flavours.
Not for me.
But one thing, well, I'll tell you a way of trying it, which I think is probably slightly better. And I will go back and try this. So another thing that's very sort of Italian-American is pizza, which we all know came from America. It didn't come from there. So go there and go and sit in this lovely, lovely surroundings. Try the pizza.
How much are you going to pay for a pizza in
there? Okay, I'll tell you.
Dress?
So you've not only have you got pizza. Well, I don't mind. If you're sitting somewhere really beautiful and you're getting value for money, I'm happy to sort of do that. So they've got this very genuine Italian pizza oven. They've got two types of wood that they burn to make your pizza. They've got cherry wood and beech wood. And you can sit there and have an artisanal, proper pizza, 55 dirhams. So go there and go to the very elegant restaurant, take your kids, have pizza there and a cappuccino, and then see if you'd sort of like to eat more formally there.
Can we wear our Converse under our dress?
Under your dress. If it doesn't show, they're fine. Yeah.
Fantastic. Monica, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.